You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Education is great. Student loans, not so much. Those monthly payments stretch out ahead of you for years. They can spiral out of control if you're not careful, but Credible.com can help you make them manageable again. Credible.com is an online marketplace for student loan refinancing. It takes about 2 minutes for you to visit their site and see if you're overpaying on your student loans. Credible.com will help you find out if you might be able to save tons of money over the life of your federal, private, or Parent PLUS loan by refinancing. All you have to do is visit Credible.com/retro. Answer a few quick questions, and right away, you'll get real rates for refinancing, not just estimates, from multiple lenders. Credible.com is completely free to use, and checking your rates will not affect your credit score, so there's no downside here. The average user who refinances through Credible.com saves nearly $19,000 over the life of their loan by lowering their interest rate or reducing their monthly payment. Whether you want to pay off your student loans faster or simply lower your monthly payment, the choice is up to you. And right now, Retronauts listeners will get a $200 welcome bonus when refinancing through Credible.com/retro. So don't wait. Go to Credible.com/retro and click Find My Rate to see if you could save by refinancing. That's Credible.com/retro. Credible.com/retro.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another episode of Retronauts Micro. I am your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and today's topic is the Metal Gear Mailbag. We're answering your Metal Gear questions and or comments. Yes, you can answer a comment. I figured out how. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and I guess the Patriots are no longer in control of me.
But what about the Patriot Act?
Yes.
It rules us all.
I didn't read it very carefully.
No, there's a lot of pages. But yes, I decided that it's been a busy podcasting week, and I love doing like community episodes. So I figured this would be a great time just to talk about Metal Gear. There's a reason, of course. Mm-hmm. I am the one of three people playing Metal Gear Survive and actually liking it. Shocking news, folks. I've played like 65 hours of Metal Gear Survive, and I think it's a fun game with a few problems, but most games have a few problems.
Well, you're a Metal Gear 5 lover.
Yes.
Especially the gameplay portion, and so this is like removing the anime nonsense of a Kojima story.
Oh,
and
it still has anime nonsense, just not written by Kojima.
Okay, not the specific Kojima brand of anime nonsense.
Yes, it's less interesting, but also I walked away from the game saying, see, you don't need him to write a stupid story. Anyone can write a stupid story with people named like, oh my god, they have ridiculous names in this game. I'm sorry. I couldn't even remember.
I didn't even know Survive had a story in it. Obviously, I am wearing my t-shirt, hashtag Fuck Konami, that I only paid $30 for.
Wait, what is that? So it says Ray Phoenix? Oh, sorry.
I'm joking.
We were doing improv.
This is in the theater of the mind, Bob.
I'm very tired.
Yes. No, but I'm talking about the wonderful hashtag Fuck Konami movement.
Yes, that's true.
Sells a lot of t-shirts for people to not like Konami.
And I will tell you that at our live show in Milwaukee last year, someone was wearing a Make Konami Great Again hat.
Oh, God.
And from very far away, it looks like a Make America Great Again hat. And I'm not going to say that. here's what I'll say. If you're wearing a hat that says Make America Great Again, you are an asshole.
Oh, there's
no doubt about it. But seeing it from far away, it's like, I don't know it's a parody. It's like you're wearing a parody of a swastika.
Yes.
Like the joke is also signaling this could be a bad person.
I know. I'm not. MAGA hats are so easily mistakable for the parody. It is the same of like, no. My swastika armband is the reverse sign that Buddhists use. It's a parody of it. I'm a Buddhist.
Exactly.
It's like, well, I appreciate your attempt at comedy, but perhaps satire that is unmistakable from the reality is not good.
It's like, what does your brain immediately tell you? But yes, the Fuck Konami movement. I want to do this episode because we are at a weird point in Metal Gear where it's hard to look to the future because the future seems like it doesn't exist. Like, Metal Gear Survive flopped, I think, for unfair reasons. I feel like it is a good game that had terrible PR
and
was in the middle of like a maelstrom of drama. And I have to say, yes, Konami does seem like a bad company, but at this point, I am kind of tired of the Kojima cult of personality. I'm saying this as a former really, really big Kojima fan that would defend almost everything he did.
I am in his cult of personality, too, and definitely was like, well, he's the one genius in games. My opinion of him hasn't lowered the same as other former auteurs of his generation, because I do think he makes interesting things. His dumb shit is always interesting. Unlike say David Cage. I don't find his stuff is laughable, not interesting to me.
Yes.
But in the case of Kojima, though, I mean, we'll see what he does post Konami and judge him on that standard. But oppositely with Konami, it's just like they have just been their own worst enemy. They are a company that doesn't give a fuck about what they're thought of, and I think a lot of Japanese publishers get the people think that they don't give a shit about what North American fans think of anything or anyone outside of Japan, what they think, but Konami really gives that off.
Yeah, and I mean, as much as I would love the company to make more games, I guess via the rules of capitalism, if games aren't profitable for you, you don't have to make them. But I feel like makes me upset about Konami is hearing how they treat their workers
in a
not very good way, almost like they have like a secret prison they send them to or something. It's like, you are a janitor for life now, former game director, or whatever those horror stories that, like, I believe Kotaku or Polygon wrote about. They're easy to find.
There's multiple ones of like, well, Konami wouldn't lay people off, but they would make a 30-year veteran a janitor somewhere.
Yeah.
And they would also say, you can never talk about us ever. We will sue you to death if you do this. Like, they're bad. Konami's definitely bad. I'm with you, Bob. We should be more mad about their mistreatment of people versus their mistreatment of, say, Simon Belmont. Like,
that's true.
You know, the Castlevania games did get fucked. They got fucked over real bad.
For sure.
And the Silent Hill as well. And the Metal Gear Solid. What this episode's about.
And PT as well. But yeah, with Kojima, again, I was a big fan at some point. But I think his 3-year victory lap now is getting very tiresome, and it is my fault completely for subscribing to his Twitter account, of course. I mean, nothing will turn you off of Kojima faster than following his Twitter account, because it's just like him with every celebrity he knows constantly, and it kind of destroys the illusion of Kojima as this like tastemaker, this cineast, if you will, because it's like, oh my god, he likes every movie. He likes every, even the worst movies he likes. It just, it really destroys the mystery. Again, I'm opting into following him. I recommend you don't if you want the mystique to still be there. But I'm kind of sick of the victory lap. I really want to see Death Stranding, and I really want to see him see if he can still deliver without his hundreds of people behind him, because I feel like they are the unsung heroes of Metal Gear. With Metal Gear Solid 5, I loved it. I played 200 hours of it. I didn't touch any of the story because it was optional for the most part, and that was fine. And I feel like Kojima's fingers were mostly in the story, and everyone behind him was implementing all of these ideas, like the sandbox stuff that I love about Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah, though with Death Stranding, he is supported by another group of soon-to-be unsung heroes at Guerrilla Games, who just made the very celebrated Horizon Zero Dawn.
It's true.
And now their next game they're working on with Kojima Productions is Death Stranding. So it feels like he at least has another good cadre of developers backing him up.
I hope so. I feel like Guerrilla Games, is it? Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like they are very, very good developers. I just don't like any of their games.
Horizon, I like more. All the Killzone games can, like, I just throw them in a ditch.
Yeah.
If it was up to me, I never gave one single poo about that.
They were made for no one.
Yeah.
They're just like, we need a shooter. Sony needs a shooter. Make a shooter.
Sony fanboys need to pretend that this is good. And they're like, we don't need Halo.
This is our Halo. Oh, yeah.
No, sorry, Sony fanboys.
Yes. I like Sony, too. So, yeah, I mean, the future is bleak for Metal Gear. But now we can look to the past, and I say My recommendation is play Metal Gear Survive. It is a survival game, if you know what that is, and if you like those kind of games, this is a very good interpretation of that via Metal Gear stuff, Metal Gear wackiness, and the Fox engine, which I love. Mm-hmm. Like, one of my biggest disappointments with Kojima leaving Konami or getting laid off or getting fired or whatever happened is that, like, this engine is so great, like, these mechanics are so great, and now nothing will come of them. But now there is a variation on Metal Gear, and I feel like the Metal Gear offshoots can be fun. I don't know why. I do know why people want to hate it, but it's just like, let people make spinoffs. It's fine. Other people have made Metal Gear spinoffs before without Kojima.
Yeah, I do think it's symbolically fitting that it's a zombie game because people view Metal Gear as a zombie without Kojima.
That's true. But I wrote a US Gamer article about this. Like, I think it was called Let's Calm Down About Metal Gear Survive, and it was because I was the contrarian, therefore the smartest man in the room.
I do feel bad for the man they made, Konami made as the figurehead for this game.
Yeah.
He'd been an executive producer on Metal Gear games for a long time. He was not just some stooge they shoved on top of it. He was the main producer on the Konami side of Metal Gear Solid Revenge or Metal Gear Rising Revengeance. I know that because I interviewed him about it at the Konami offices, and he had been working on it as long as anybody. But I feel bad for him because he clearly was not invited to the reindeer games with all the other Kojima pals that are working with
him. Yeah, I mean, it was a game made under duress. It's probably not the game they wanted to make, but I feel like they somehow managed to make something good. But
And I will say, no publisher that I've been in their office of felt more like a prison than Konami. We got trapped in a hallway because they're like, no, the PR guy you're with, his pass doesn't open this door in a hallway, so you better call this guy.
At the Portland Retro Gaming Expo live show in 2017, we actually talked to two people who worked on Metal Gear Solid 4 as localizers in Japan at Konami, and they were talking about like the insanity of the degrees of clearance they needed in order to like access their computer to work on the game. And like a guy wanted to bring it home to work on it, and they're like, this is unheard of. We cannot possibly do this, sir.
That's pretty suspicious, I gotta say. But okay, yes.
But the game was never leaked, so let's go to the mailbag. We're going to look to the past of Metal Gear, and I definitely want to hear your thoughts in the comments of this episode. Like, what do you think the future can be? Can they iterate on Metal Gear Survive? Can they make another Metal Gear thing? I really want to know. But let's go to the mailbag. So first we have Phil, who says, I came into the series with Snake Eater, so there was a lot of backtracking in terms of figuring out the plot for me. I always seem to come back to Snake Eater. I don't know if it's the one I most remember fondly, or I just plain like it. Is there a game in the Metal Gear Solid series that you keep coming back to? And that's from Phil. And Phil, I'm going to steal your answer, and that is Metal Gear Solid 3. I feel it is the most interesting in terms of the mechanics and the story. And it's actually easy to like parse the plot and follow it, and I like the characters the most. Having said that, I recorded a Metal Gear Solid 3 episode that will go live sometime soon, and I realized, like, oh, after playing Metal Gear 5, every Metal Gear is ruined for me because everything just feels so stiff and mechanical. But I can still go back and play 3. It's just a little bit rougher now. What do you think, Henry?
Yeah, the gameplay of all the old ones is definitely hurt by 5 feeling like, oh, well, we finally figured out we finally figured out the wheel. And you're like, well, it's hard to go back to older, crappier wheels.
It's actually like playing, like, 5 is the Monster Hunter world to the rest of the rest of the older games. Like, they made all the improvements that needed to be made, that should have been made years ago.
It took 15 years for most Japanese developers to figure out current-gen stuff.
But now they make the best games again.
Hurrah! But I guess I don't return to Metal Gear games a lot lately. Back when I did, I definitely returned to MGS1 multiple times just through remakes. So I played MGS1, then played it again in the VR missions, then played it again through Bleemcast on my Dreamcast.
Wow.
And then the GameCube, replayed that one as well. And then also another one I played, like, the most I'd ever replayed a single version and like on the same cart was Ghost Babble.
Oh, okay.
Or just Metal Gear Solid, as it was also known. On the Game Boy Color, it was just such a... I had never played really the Metal Gear games before Metal Gear Solid came out in 98. So playing those, a kind of modern-ish version of the NES and MSX gameplay starring Snake in the solid form.
Yeah.
It was a really cool thing. Especially the end fight with the Metal Gear is so cinematic despite being on a fucking Game Boy Color. It's beautiful.
And you can do almost everything you can do in Metal Gear using like four buttons. I mean, it's not elegant, but they manage to, like, you can duck, you can crawl, you can lean against walls, you
smoke.
You can do all that stuff. But yeah, you're right. It was the introduction to Americans of what the MSX games were like.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that is very important. We have a lot of Ghost Babel or Ghost Babel stuff in this. So Henry, can you get the next one?
Okay. Mike Damon says, if all you knew about war came from the Metal Gear series, would you say war is good or bad? Same question for espionage. Boy, this is a deep one.
War is extremely cool and totally anime.
I think Kojima's opinion seems to be one of anti-war and anti-interventionalism, but also of a man who loves guns and loves the military and worships the tools of war, but not so much the results of it, I would say.
I think it is a very Japanese perspective where they underwent some very terrible circumstances in which that would make a country very anti-war and the citizens very anti-war, but as we see we just did a recording talking about the Evangelion series, but it's funny, in Japan there are like military otaku, there are gun otaku, but they just are interested in the replicas. I don't think they're like, yes, I want to take this and kill someone. But I feel like ultimately with Metal Gear, as much as it wants to have its cake and eat it too, with 3 especially, it just like soldiers are tools to be used and thrown away by not even governments, by whoever can pay the most money. Like there are no, it's like the scene from Network. It's happening in Metal Gear Solid 3. It's like there are no governments anymore. It's just like the highest bidder.
No borders.
And these like capitalist factions fighting each other.
I mean, Kojima in the Metal Gear games are way ahead of the curve on PMCs dominating everything. And he definitely has a pro-troops stance, but not even like support our troops type feeling that you get in like jingoism in America, but more of just like, it's really hard being a troop and you're putting all of this shit on them. And for what? To steal resources from another country?
Yeah, like Snake won't shake LBJ's hand at the end of Snake Eater.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
Like, no, fuck you. You used me.
You're
this sucks.
All monsters.
Yeah.
Like in that Snake, that Big Boss's dream of just creating a world for the soldiers and just of like, no, this is the land for the soldiers. We'll rent ourselves out to other people, but we're not going to invade countries ourselves. Like they want that kind of independence in it.
Yeah,
so,
it's like we decide our own fate, but unfortunately Big Boss captured us and made us live here.
Yeah.
But again, it is a video game.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. They, you know what? Those guys on the base don't have so much choice in the matter.
They're assigned which department to go into. But you'll hear this on the Metal Gear Solid 3 one. I said on that that it was a very, very like sort of subversive statement to put in a game, especially as the Iraq War and the new war in the Middle East was really heating up in 2004, to have this game with this sort of very distinctly anti-war and sort of pro-soldier, not pro support our troops, but pro like soldiers are being used, soldiers should be pitied, not in a like derogatory way, but just like these poor people, they're just being used by these forces.
Yeah, for militaristic like imperialism, quite honestly. And so I that's what I think the opinion of war is in that, but it is hard to separate that from a video game where you have to make killing people fun. Like that from a gameplay standpoint, you can also make not killing people fun, like choking people into unconsciousness can also be a fun challenge. But in a game where shooting someone in the face has to be fun, you can only be so anti-war in that, or anti-espionage.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, ultimately the game would become a very pacifistic game where the mechanics would reward you more for not killing, ultimately. Like, you get the best rewards for not killing. It's harder to do, but you also get resources like soldiers for not killing. Better scores and stuff like that.
Or you don't have to see a bunch of corpses.
That's true.
In Metal Gear Solid 3.
Yeah. And I think 3 had the most like, I don't know, understandable through line about war. I think a lot of the games are just like, nukes are the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
Nukes are big trouble. Never touch nukes. Never use nukes. And there's a reason why a Japanese writer would have that sort of perspective.
Yeah.
Not that everyone shouldn't think that, you know.
Yes.
So up next, we have a question from Alex Bullock, who says, I have somehow managed to make it through 25 years without playing a Metal Gear game. I've wanted to start, but always felt drowned by the prospect of the complex lore and endless cutscenes. Is it worth playing the series from the beginning, or is there a point you'd recommend jumping in at, including Twin Snakes and spinoffs? And I will say, in terms of the mechanics, in terms of the controls, the Metal Gear Solid series has always been very, very idiosyncratic, where they don't play like any other game. And because of that, they don't age particularly well in terms of how to interface with them.
Yeah, they in some ways become bigger relics every time they come back. And there's really, but when you try to change the gameplay or update it, then the feel is completely different. I mean, Twin Snakes is a great example of that, where Metal Gear Solid was a very specific type of game. But in between the two, between the release of original Metal Gear Solid and Twin Snakes, 2 came out, and so they tried to put in the first-person shooting of 2, or they did put the first-person shooting of 2 into Twin Snakes. And when you use it, that breaks the game. Like, it breaks multiple boss fights, especially the Revolver Ocelot one. And so when you do... when you do that, it's like, well, maybe they should remake Metal Gear 3 with the 5 engine. But if they did, is it anything like it's supposed to be? It completely changes everything.
I mean, as much as I'd like this person to Alex to start with 3, because it's sort of the beginning of Big Boss's story, and that's the most important story in Metal Gear. Like, Solid Snake is sort of a patsy that nobody cares about. I would say that's a hard game to start with if you haven't played it, because it's like, to do simple moves in the game, you are working with a 2004 mindset built around analog buttons.
Yes.
So it is something that we're not used to. This might sound weird, but I would say, honestly, start with 5, because that is the ideal version of all of those mechanics. And if you're interested in the story, you can go back and see where those mechanics came from. I think if you start with the sort of platonic ideal of Metal Gear, you can have a greater understanding and maybe more patience for the older versions of that.
If you can mentally teleport yourself back to 1998 and, say, play Metal Gear 1 on your PSP, or, you know, on the PS3 version of a PS1 classic game on there, then you might have a good time, I think. But I definitely wouldn't play Twin Snakes. Like, no.
I would not do that. Yeah, Metal Gear 1 might be a good... So Metal Gear Solid 1 might be a good place to start, because because of the platform it's on, its ambition, while very big for the time, is still very limited from a modern perspective. So they can only do so much, and that gives you a new player in 2018... I feel like you'll be able to figure out more, because there's the rooms are smaller, there's less interactions and things like that. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but it makes sense in my head.
And the remake of 3, well, not remake, but like HD port on 360, more so, I actually like the 360 version more than the PS3 version of it, of MGS3, that's a good one to try too, if you're going to do that. Maybe the 3DS version, I knew it had second stick support for
the Frankenstick.
Yeah, the Frankenstick, but I never really played it with the Frankenstick.
I heard they simplify a lot of the actions via like the touchscreen and stuff like that, but I've never played it.
Oh, so, yeah.
Thank God for that. But there's no ape escapes. There's no ape escapes in that.
So Joey asks, which Metal Gear character is the most smoochable? You get to choose where between the nice one in the forehead and the quick one on the lips, or a big smacker on the cheek. DD and Raiden are out of contention for being too damn smoochable. Jeez, if you're taking Raiden out of shit. Jack would be my most smoochable, only when his bottom lip is a robot, though.
Does he have to be completely naked and covering himself and doing cartwheels?
Poor Jack ends up being a head on a spine. That's all that's left of him after a certain point.
But he becomes so edgy.
He's quite an edgelord.
Like a new metal soundtrack follows him around everywhere while he does cool, edgy things.
I mean, Meryl's an easy one to say is smoochable, definitely. I do actually like the, I think, young Revolver in Metal Gear 3 is a handsome young lad as well. Maybe he'd be my pick, or Meryl, or is it Ava, the spy?
Ava from Metal Gear Solid 3.
The spy who shagged you in number 3.
She certainly did. I would say my pick for number 1 most smoochable, and I'm a gentleman, so I will choose the cheek, sir, is Dr. Strangelove from Peace Walker. Yes, there's just a character named Dr. Strangelove in Peace Walker, and I believe she is a lesbian, so that's why I'm going for the cheek. There's no, like, where could this lead me?
Yeah.
But I would appreciate the cheek.
In a completely friendly, platonic, like, I just want to comfort you way because you've had such a hard life. I would kiss Paz on the forehead just to be like, this really sucks for you. I'm so sorry.
But also, I think Paz is like a giant traitor at the end of Peace Walker. The story's very complicated.
Yeah, I guess she was, but I don't know. She's a fucking child, man.
It's true.
I'll cut her a break.
They did give her an ignoble end, so Jesus. Let's not even talk about the, what was the name of that game? Phantom Pain?
Ground Zeroes.
Ground Zeroes, right.
Ground Zeroes.
Haitani next, who says, of course Kojima gets all this praise and hate because he's pretty much the PR face of the Metal Gear games. But it's quite obvious that one person can't do games of this scale on their own. Especially games are usually huge team efforts with design leads, virtual leads, writers, directors, again, depending on the scale of the game. Is it really okay to let Metal Gear look like it's all Kojima? And I will say, no, we mentioned this in the beginning of the show. It's a very, very convenient narrative, especially with games, because games are extremely complicated. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy to build a narrative like, no, it's just this guy. This is the guy that he tells everyone what to do, and then they do it, and the work of genius springs forth from his mind. Mm-hmm. And then they're just all his worker bees or whatever. But that is never the case. And it's actually the same with film. Like, it might turn out that the director you like actually works with an editor who is better. You know, it could just be
a cinematographer.
That too, yeah. And that could be the same for Kojima. Like, it could be the person who actually takes his ideas and implements them, like these very technical things. Like, Kojima is not sitting down crunching the numbers on, like, animations and, mm-hmm. you know, RNG and things like that. Maybe he used to in, like, 1988. But I feel like it is those people that really are the important ones. Of course, Kojima's ideas are what defines Metal Gear, but without those people behind him, he would not have a game.
Yeah, I mean, it's his fingers are everywhere in it. When you see a very silly thing happen, or an interesting thing too, of say, like, taking photos of the beauties inside of the beast in Metal Gear Solid 4.
Right.
That's very much an idea of Kojima that he wanted to see through and executed. And you could maybe even give him credit for, like, well, you built a team that executes this very well. So he's at the very least able to, he could get some credit for building a team of great people to work with and recognizing talent. There is that. And yeah, it's just in with film, it's the auteur theory, like, started in the 60s in film criticism, of just saying a film is by the director and you give the director the majority of the credit more than anybody else because it's the director's film. And that's fair to an extent, but there, if you have to say someone made a film, then recognize that. I definitely am more pro us giving auteur treatment to game makers than a publisher. It's something
true.
When I was a games writer and would cover games and cover development, I would do my utmost to recognize the developer, at least by the name of the developer group, if not the name of the people who worked on it directly, because I think that gets lost in stuff a bunch, especially I think in the gamer community, in quotes. I think it's very easy to be like, EA did great or EA did bad or whatever. It's like, EA is a bunch of executives who okayed something. They weren't in the, you know, studio in Montreal crunching this stuff and working unpaid overtime on this.
Yeah.
So I don't feel, I'm not comfortable in looking at it in that way. And in a bigger way, that's with Kojima as well. And I think the cult of personality, which as a member of the Games Press, I was absolutely a part of.
Me too.
My responsibility. I mean, I worked with people who they treated an interview with Kojima just like, well, I've spoken to Jesus. Like, you haven't spoken to Jesus yet. I've done it.
He blessed
I've interviewed
me.
Before. I once had an article shot down because a coworker was like in a different office, sent an email saying like, no, we're not doing that. I've interviewed Kojima four times, and that's not what he would say about this. I was like,
we're best friends now.
I was just like, yeah, okay, good. You did fucking two cover stories about him in England. Boo.
Actually, I got a kind of I guess I was naive at the time, but this never happened with any other figure we wrote about. But a one-up, I don't know who wrote an article about Kojima. I don't know what it was about, but we just pulled a photo of him from somewhere to, you know, stick in the article because, you know, that's what you do for a website.
Yes.
Konami emailed us and was like, Mr. Kojima actually prefers to be photographed from this side of his face, and here's a photo you can use. And it's just like, this is kind of weird, like, that he gets this kind of treatment. Like,
I had heard a similar story about that with a Ken Levine-type figure.
Make sure he's flexing in this picture.
yes, but I think, you know, I want the creatives to get more credit, and that would include Kojima in that. But I think, you know, he's just a man, folks. He's just a man.
It's true. If you're a student loan haver like me, you know they can completely wipe you out if you don't get a handle on them. How do you do that? Credible.com. All you have to do is visit Credible.com/retro, answer a few questions, and right away you'll get real rates, not ranges of rates, from up to 9 different lenders. Credible.com is completely free to use, and checking your rates will not affect your credit score, so you really have nothing to lose. The average user who refinances through Credible.com saves almost $19,000 over the life of their loan. Just think about what you could do with $19,000. Pay off your student loans faster or lower your monthly payment, whatever works for you. And right now, Retronauts listeners will get a $200 welcome bonus when refinancing through Credible.com/retro. Don't wait. Go to Credible.com/retro and click Find My Rate to see if you could save by refinancing. Remember, that's Credible.com/retro. Go to Credible.com/retro today for a $200 welcome bonus.
Hello, guys. It's MMA fighter Chael Sonnen. Check out my podcast, You're Welcome, with Chael Sonnen every Wednesday and Friday right here at Podcast One. We cover the latest in mixed martial arts and everything else going on in the world of sport. Listen free to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen, exclusively available on Apple Podcasts, at PodcastOne.com, and on the Podcast One app. If you love the show, share it with a friend and leave us a rating and review.
If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for that same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
They've stolen the ultimate weapon and brought the world to the brink of destruction. Now, one man is all that stands in their way. Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater, rated M for mature. Peace by any means necessary, from Konami.
And caller number 9 for $1 million. Rita, complete this quote. Life is like a box of
chocolates.
Rita, you're cutting out. We need your answer.
Life is like a box of chocolates.
Oh, sorry. That's not what we were looking for. On to caller number 10.
Bad network got you glitched out of luck? Switch to Boost Mobile, super reliable, super fast nationwide network, and get 4 lines, each with unlimited gigs for just $100 a month. Plus, get 4 free phones. Boost makes it easy to switch. Switching makes it easy to save.
Real question. After Kojima pulling wool over everyone's eyes for most of 2001 by going out of the way to release screenshots of the Big Shell with Snake as a playable character, do you think we will ever see a reveal or secret about a game as big as that again? The only thing I can think of in recent years was the search for Frog Fractions 2. Mm. Also, what was your reaction to learning about Raiden, and do you remember the reactions around your office? Well, so this is about Metal Gear Solid 2, and I mean, I still think there are twists like that in games. Not all too much, but I mean, Call of Duty actually gets away with that kind of stuff a lot of just, or more so in the Infinity Ward days, I think. But they get to say like, no, there's a whole other section of a game in here, or there's a whole other star. Same with like Halo 2, around the, a few years after MGS 2, they completely hid you play as the Arbiter for half of the frickin' campaign, and they got away with that too. I think, you know, Grand Theft Auto or Rockstar, major developers still get away with that kind of stuff. And then on top of that, indie games, they don't have a PR cycle or PR jerks telling them to reveal every secret, so they get to get away with that stuff a lot.
I feel like now, so there can be surprises in games, but this was a playful bait and switch, where it's like, this is a game with your hero Solid Snake, who you love so much. Whoops, actually you're this guy, and we didn't tell you about him, but that's who you are for 80% of the game. I feel like, as much as I love that, I feel like there's a certain segment of the gamer community, and there are good gamers, and I'm a gamer, and I like some gamers, but there's a certain segment who feel that the customer is always right, if you will. And there would be, I mean, if you want to look at something like the Mass Effect 3 thing that happened, where there was a huge stink over creative choice, and my thought was, number one, I think you were kind of naive to think this would all have paid off in a fantastic ending that would have been worth 100 hours of your life. I mean, nothing. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Nothing in your life is worth 100 hours of it. No game would be.
I finished several hundred hours games, and I was not just like, this is all worth it. I was just like, oh, it's finally over. I can stop playing this now. That's usually my take on a 100-hour game.
And rejection of that kind of stuff is, going to the stuff we talk about Kojima as like, what an auteur. Well, in that way, you need to respect him making an artistic choice, even if you don't like it to a degree. But then again, I mean, I'm somebody who calls out bad artists all the time, so it's not like I. But as a person who loves pranking and being a prankster and a wankster, I did like Kojima fucking with people. Like, he,
and it was the theme of the game. It was sort of like a UCB prank almost.
The theme of the game is that like, nothing's real. It's all swept out from under your feet. This is all bullshit. This guy's not even really a vampire. This lady doesn't have luck bending abilities, or does she?
That guy's faking his dead legs.
Exactly. All those things, that was the theme throughout the whole thing. And part of that too, though, is he was mad. I got the feeling he was mad that he had to make another Solid Snake game, and he wanted to punish you for making him do that. And also, I do get the degree of anger about it, just because it wasn't just fake screenshots, it wasn't just fake trailers, it was a giant demo that featured Solid Snake that sells you that Solid Snake is the main character.
It's true. I feel like, so like I said with the Mass Effect thing, I think, A, you might have been a little naive to think it would have fully satisfied you in the way that you expected, but B, I feel like if it's a creative choice and it didn't work, then you move on. It's fine. Mm-hmm. Like, but in these days of, you know, hashtags and people talking about consumer rights, there are some consumer rights that are important. I don't think you were owed a good story. I think there could be a bad story, and that's just how it is, and you have to move on. But I feel like if Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty came out today, there would be a hashtag about it. Konami would have to make an updated version of the game. It's like, oh, now you play as Solid Snake the entire time. We're very, very sorry. I feel like they would have to bend to that sort of demographic now. They could not. I mean, there was no social media in 2001. People could not organize for these things. In a way, social media has been great for a lot of groups. In a way, it's been very bad for some groups.
Also, in the no social media thing, like, okay, it didn't get out before release because every press outlet, I believe, that had access to an early copy of the game did not spoil it as their embargo told them to. Even if, no matter how many embargoes were signed, one person would just have to play the game early and see that Raiden was the main character, and they would just announce it. And they'd say like, hey, you know, actually Raiden's the main character of this. Then even places that signed the embargo would say, well, we're just reporting on what this place reported on. And the secret's out immediately. Like, it would have definitely been out before release. That's for sure.
Like, magazines were reviewing this game on time, which means they played the game a few months before release. So I am really surprised. I imagine there's probably like one message board post somewhere that spoils it, but no one saw it. I mean, I can't believe that it was never leaked or anything like that, but I guess I didn't know about it.
Oh, and to Drew's other question, your reactions to learning about Raiden, I mean, I was like, huh?
Yeah.
I definitely had a huh. I wasn't mad. And actually, though, I came to really love Raiden or Jack as a character. Like, he's a poor son of war. Like, he is a child soldier who is betrayed by every single person he's ever known, and also mocked through and derided his entire existence.
And he's actually you if you look at your dog tags.
Yes, that's true. And lastly, what I about Raiden is that I had asked. I got to go and see a development thing for Revengeance. I got to go to the Platinum offices, and I asked the director of that game about it, about what he thought of Raiden when he played it as a gamer for the first time. He's like, he then laughs because he's saying it in front of the guy who worked on the game. And he's like, well, I was surprised too, but I actually came to like the guy.
That's great. So. I mean, I don't think I was particularly a very, very mature, I guess, 18-year-old when I played this game. But when I encountered Raiden, I'm just like, oh, I guess I'm this guy now. Mm-hmm. Because having played Metal Gear Solid 1 and loving it, I'm like, no, Metal Gear is a series that fucks with you. And this is them just escalating that. So I was just like, where is this going to go now? That's really what I was like. Okay, what are you going to do now? Show me different things. Like, I thought it was a cool subversion. But I'll tell you what, and I think I've told this story before on podcasts, but I worked at a GameStop. Sorry, I always have to stop and correct myself. GameStop. And you've never seen angrier people than people the day after Metal Gear Solid 2 came out. They were taking their anger out on me. Like, everyone went home and finished the game in one night, which I don't recommend.
No.
And then they came back and were like, this game sucks. And I was just like, that's why I didn't play it at launch, because I worked launch of that game, and I was just like, I think I played it like in January or something without knowing the spoiler,
man.
But I just know everyone was bringing it back saying it sucked. I'm just like, how could this is Metal Gear? What are you talking about? It got tens and stuff.
It's beautiful.
Why would a magazine lie to me? So Mike Carbine says, I've always felt like Metal Gear Solid series was great, not because of Kojima, but in spite of him. Ooh, my favorite game in the series, Ghost Babel, Metal Gear Solid 1, and Snake Eater, all had heavy influences from either the localization teams, other producers, or in Ghost Babel's case, nothing to do with Kojima at all. Am I crazy for thinking the series took a huge nosedive in quality when he was given complete control? I feel like Metal Gear Solid 4 is an answer to that question, and I apologize to anyone in the audience who enjoys that game. So I have to recommend the YouTuber, a great guy who makes great essays. His name is Super Bunny Hop. And he has a great video called Critical Close-Up Metal Gear Solid 4, sort of dissecting Metal Gear Solid 4 and what a mess it is 10 years after it was made. So, like, Metal Gear Solid 3 was basically Kojima having to prove himself again to Konami. Like, I can make people happy with Metal Gear. I will kind of, you know, reboot the series in a way, like a soft reboot with a quote-unquote new character. Mm-hmm. And after that was a huge hit and critically acclaimed, I think he was given complete control again, and that's how Metal Gear Solid 4 happened. Metal Gear Solid 4 was basically devoted to answering every question that never really mattered that much. Like, now that I know all the answers, I'm not a happier person.
No, I mean, I guess it was, maybe that was him even surprising you of just like, for three games, you think you get no answers. And like, all right, you're going to get some answers.
Yeah.
They're wacky as hell. Like, well, if you really did want to know why a hand seemed to control a guy and talk with Cam Clark's voice, you'll find out.
Yes.
Like, and it's not very good.
I do want to do an episode about Metal Gear Solid 4 to refresh my bad memories of it. I really wanted to like it. And I think my issue was I played it far outside of the hype zone. I played it in 2010.
Whoa.
And I think, like a lot of games of that era, it was really caught up in the hype of its pre-release. Like that and GTA 4 and Bioshock Infinite, I feel like the more honest reviews you'd find people who played it a few years later, because these were the things like, no, it's good because they told us it would be good. So, of course. But Metal Gear Solid 4, I really dislike it. And I want to replay it for Retronauts just to sort of parse like what's wrong with it and to see how little self-control Kojima had in terms of how much self-control he seemed to have in 3.
Yeah. I mean, 3 was a back-to-basics type approach, and that's why it works so well, and it gets rid of all the nanomachines and bullshit there. And 4 was the opposite of that. It was all that shit coming back, and I think, too, one thing you do have to really give Kojima credit for in those games and their success is the PR cycle. Like, he
yes.
promotes those games so well with, like, he's, I honestly think he's more interested in making the trailers than the games themselves, honestly. The way they're presented, the song choices, how long they are. He did post-credit stings way before the MCU was an expert in that.
That's
stuff.
Right, Mr. President.
Mr. President.
I think you can feel however you want to feel about Metal Gear Solid 4. It's okay if you like, it's okay to like a game, but I feel like there's a reason why sort of after Metal Gear Solid 1, the main path of the series is 3 and then Peace Walker and then 5. Like, I feel like there's a reason why that both those sorts of mechanics and that sort of storytelling and those characters are what eventually became like the main attraction of Metal Gear.
I mean, Kojima clearly loves Big Boss more than Snake.
Yeah.
Than Solid Snake. He's definitely into one more than the other. And same with he's into that level, that era of military equipment than he is in futurism. And I think, too, for what interests me most about 4 is just as a project that he wanted to show you he could make you like characters you thought you hated in the case of Raiden. And also the Jimmy dude who shits his pants all the time.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Who marries Meryl?
He ends up with Meryl.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, oh, you think that's the waifu of Snake? Nah, ends up with Meryl.
Who invited a monkey to that wedding? Stupid monkey.
So Wilhelm Masterson says, I'm really sad that Metal Gear Survive and its story made me realize that Hideo Kojima is basically Ernest Cline with his constant references to movies and his other work blatantly being shown off in Metal Gear Solid games. It's really sad to see that he's just basically repeated his themes and elements from earlier games, most blatantly in 5, which stole the plot of 4 and scratched out nanomachines and put metallic Achaea or vocal cord parasite. Even in-game set pieces are repeated, like having to rescue a scientist from a mansion and then extract them during a zombie outbreak. Having MGS2, a theme of meme, being so accepted and praised, basically gave him an excuse to just copy stuff in the later games.
I kind of like self-referential stuff, if just that it rewards you as someone who follows something, but it can get self-indulgent and it can get meaningless.
As George Lucas said, it rhymes. It's like a poem.
It's like poetry. I've been listening to the podcast, 372 Pages Will Never Get Back, and it is a tour of the two Ernest Cline novels, Ready Player One and Armada. It's done by Mystery Science Theater's Michael J. Nelson and one of the Riff Tracks writers, Connor Listoka, and I have not read either one of these books. This podcast makes me not want to read them, but it's a fun exploration. But you get a sense of how Kojima and Cline are very similar people and that they're very infatuated with these specific areas of pop culture. The issue with Kojima is he is doing it slyly. He's like, I like this Blade Runner thing, so I'm going to put it in my game, but I'm not going to be like, look, it's the Blade Runner thing. No, this is my thing. And Cline, Cline would be like, I climbed to the DeLorean, the famous car from Back to the Future, a 1985 movie by Robert Zemeckis. He wants to prove how much he knows about things to you as a writer.
Yeah, Kojima isn't trying to like get a gold star for showing off everything he remembers. There is something, though, about like as we've said this 8 million times on the Talking Simpsons podcast, but the thing that happens where you watch The Simpsons a ton and then as you grow up you watch Citizen Kane, for example, like, oh, that's all that stuff. That is kind of how it is if you're a younger person playing Metal Gear games and then you see, say, El Topo and you realize, oh, this is a Metal Gear game. El Topo is just, especially it's Metal Gear 3.
And oh my God, like, go watch Running Man. Not only is it Metal Gear, it is the basis for every video game boss fight. Just like you go into these arenas with bosses with like specific powers and you take them out in certain ways. Like, it's amazing. It's like,
in a lot of ways, mainstream video games have not grown beyond the films of 1985.
Exactly.
And same with Escape from New York. Like, you see all this stuff, you're like, well, these are the things he borrowed from, if you want to put. And I mean, that's not like, I'm not saying put him in artist jail because he was not completely original, because George Lucas wasn't either. Like, he was. Yeah. That's actually my Jordan Peterson. But everyone's influenced by something else. Even Kurosawa, who everybody ripped off, he was influenced by stuff. Osamu Tezuka, who was the god of manga, he watched Disney films all the time and started from there. Like, so influence is not the same as being a ripoff artist, but I also don't like ripoff artists who hide behind saying, I'm just influenced by it.
So Kojima's plagiarism, if you want to call it that, is I think he does more interesting things with it than Cline does. I feel like Cline, again, like I said, like, I got into this, which is from this movie, released in this year by this director. And if you're a reader and you're into that, you're like, oh, he knows the stuff I know and I connect with this person. But Kojima, he'll put a DeLorean in a thing, but it'll just be there and it'll be part of a larger story. Like, oh, this character has a DeLorean too. Or there are Terminators in this world, but they have a different meaning. They're Snatchers and they mean this. Like, he'll do interesting things with them. Of course, I wish he would have his own ideas, but he was making games at a time where it was like, yeah, just make an alien game. No one cares.
Yeah, who's going to sue us? Nobody. Like, let's put Stallone on the cover of Contra. Like, he's not going to sue us. Yeah.
Silent K says, I just wish there was more Metal Gear that took place during the era of Youthful Snake. As a fan of every Metal Gear game since the original, I find the sleek and futuristic look and feel with the CQC-less stealth gameplay of Metal Gear Solid 1 and the snake-played part of Sons of Liberty to be the most Metal Gear of all the games. While Twin Snakes and VR missions feature Youthful Snake and are super neat, they don't quite scratch the itch. Did you guys get enough time with Youthful Snake from the series? Which game represents the core of Metal Gear most to you? And that's from Silent K. Do you have an answer, Henry?
Yeah, I do think Metal Gear Solid the First represents the core of Solid Snake to me the most. And I think it's the most you get a Solid Snake. I think Kojima, both in a way of wanting to punish you but for wanting more Snake, but also because Metal Gear Solid thematically ends with Snake retiring. He starts the game saying, I'm too old. This better be my last mission. I don't want to do this. And I think Kojima sees it as wrong to go back on that for the character, and that should have some price to pay if he does. And part of that is like, no, when I introduce Fox Die, like, that means something. And he, if you really want him to come back, like, you're making Snake suffer by making him come back. You have to hear him cough all the time and die.
That's a great theory. I prefer Big Boss, really, because I feel like Solid Snake had a role in Metal Gear Solid. And, by intention, he has, like, no character, no personality. He is a copy, and he is sort of a blank slate throughout that game and sort of a thing to bounce information off of.
Metal Gear.
And eventually he goes through an arc where he has to figure out, like, what his purpose is after realizing, like, where he came from. But I feel like the story of Big Boss of, loving being a soldier, then having his leader betray him, and then figuring out what the betrayal was all about, and then starting Outer Heaven and all that stuff, I feel like that's a much more interesting story with a much more interesting arc than Solid Snake had. Yeah. I feel like you said, his arc is done in one, and it's hard to figure out, like, well, like, why do I care about him anymore?
Yeah, his emptiness is kind of corroding him in Metal Gear 4, which thematically I actually kind of like as a story, but that's your punishment for making him come back. And I think too, I do love Solid as a character in his just like clueless emptiness, I guess. And I do wish he had come back I was really hoping that they would have closed the loop. Obviously, they weren't going to do it because it was too predictable. But once they made MGS5, they get so close to when Metal Gear begins that they could just retell the story of Metal Gear in a way that actually is a storytelling medium, which an MSX game is not, and do that game.
Yeah, but, I mean, they come as close as possible to the spoilers from Metal Gear Solid 5, the secret ending, the ultra hard to get ending. They have to do a bunch of extra stuff to get. You are a double for Big Boss.
Yeah, you were never him.
And you were sent to go to wherever the snake break in Outer Heaven, Metal Gear 1. I'm sorry.
Yes, he does. Yeah. And he is shocked to find out that his big boss is the guy who runs it.
Yes. And this is like, so Kojima had to close this loop, which is great because it's like he has to close the loop that started with 8-bit game writing. So because they made Metal Gear 2, in Metal Gear 2, it's revealed that wasn't Big Boss. That was his double. You actually fight Big Boss in Metal Gear 2. So for Metal Gear Solid 5, you are playing as the double of Big Boss the entire game, and you find that out at the very end in the secret ending when they set up the whole Snake is infiltrating thing.
I know. Wouldn't that... And that is perfect for the next Metal Gear to be a remake of Metal Gear. It would have been so awesome. Obviously, if that does happen with Konami now, it'll just be seen as counterfeit, as fake in and of itself, because if Kojima isn't directing the game, then it's not the story. It's not it again, you know?
Yeah.
But, meh.
Yeah, I mean, I really want to see them do more with the Fox Engine, and I really want to see...
They're making all those soccer games with it.
That is true. They do make soccer games with that thing. I don't know. Like, Metal Gear Survive is fun, and... God, I don't know if they could tell more stories. Maybe make some remakes. I don't know. I really can't decide what I want. There are just so many Metal Gear games I can go back and play. And frankly, I can probably play like another 100 hours of 5 and another 100 hours of Survive, and I'd be happy. But thank you for joining us, folks, for this mailbag. It's always fun to talk to you guys and answer your questions. And recording this in the Talking Simpsons studio, and I have been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. Of course, Retronauts is a Patreon-supported podcast, and we thank you for your support. If you want to support the show, just go to patreon.com/retronauts, and for $3 a month, you can get every episode a week ahead of time and ad-free and at a higher bitrate, and lots of people like getting the show that way. You can get your own private RSS feed that just downloads every episode through your player of choice, and you can avoid all those ads that most people really don't like. So if you want to give us money, everything you give us pays into the show. We buy recording space, we, you know, have Jeremy fly to California to record with us, and we're actually going to be going to the Midwest Gaming Classic very soon, so April 13th to the 15th in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. You can find us there. We'll be having a panel there too, so if you're in the area or can get to the area, please go there and we'll say hi to you. Henry, what do you do? And I think you work with me on other things. I'm pretty sure.
I think so. We've seen quite a lot of each other in last month. But yes, we work on patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. That is the home of the Talking Simpsons podcast, where we go through every episode of The Simpsons chronologically in order. We are deep into season 7 now. That's how long we've been doing it. Man, it'll be crazy when we get to 200 episodes, and it'll be sooner than you think.
Oh, Trash of the Titans.
And we also started a new weekly podcast called What a Cartoon, where we talk about a different cartoon each week in the Talking Simpsons analytical and fun style. The first episode was Batman, the animated series, Heart of Ice. The second one was King of the Hill. And a third episode is Steven Universe. And you can listen to those a week early and ad-free on patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. And when you go there, too, you can get access to our brand new exclusive series, Talking Futurama, where we go through every episode of Futurama's first season in the same style, too. It's also great. There are free feeds for all that if you want to try it out. But for $5 a month, you can get access to all of that stuff and a ton more really cool things. It also supports me and Bob as well and our lifestyles of sleeping in beds instead of on the street.
I prefer beds, frankly. I hate to go out on a limb. But thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you Monday with another full-length episode. Thanks.
And caller number 9 for $1 million. Rita, complete this quote. Life is like a box of
chocolates.
Rita, you're cutting out. We need your answer.
Life is like a box of chocolates.
Oh, sorry. That's not what we were looking for. On to caller number 10.
Bad network got you glitched out of luck? Switch to Boost Mobile, super reliable, super fast nationwide network, and get 4 lines, each with unlimited gigs for just $100 a month. Plus, get 4 free phones. Boost makes it easy to switch. Switching makes it easy to save.
The Mueller Report. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. President Trump was asked at the White House if Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation report should be released next week when he will be out of town.
I guess from what I understand, that will be totally up to the Attorney General.
Maine's Susan Collins says she would vote for a congressional resolution disapproving of President Trump's emergency declaration to build a border wall, becoming the first Republican senator to publicly back it. In New York, the wounded supervisor of a police detective killed by friendly fire was among the mourners attending his funeral. Detective Brian Simonson was killed as officers started shooting at a robbery suspect last week. Commissioner James O'Neill was among the speakers today at Simonson's funeral.
It's a tremendous weight to bear, knowing that your choices will directly affect the lives of others. But cops like Brian don't shy away from it. It's the very foundation of who they are and what they do.
The robbery suspect and a man police say acted as his lookout have been charged with murder. I'm Ed Donahue.